Good morning.
Good morning.
It is really great to be here with you on this warmish, rainy morning in January. I'm Ivy. I'm a pastor here, and I'm excited to share with you this morning a little bit more of where we left off last week. Steve Watson, our senior pastor, kicked us off on this new sermon series last week around these ancient paths. These sort of spiritual practices and habits that really Jesus followers for centuries have been choosing as a way to create space sort of internally to have deeper connection with Jesus. And I find it fun that we're talking about spiritual practices on the front of a new year. There's certainly been a lot of talk about New Year's resolutions. People have been talking about how to look at their next new year and think about how to do that well. With a fresh start, a clean slate. It's certainly been a pulse of a lot of the conversations I've been in lately. And yet for me, resolutions I've kind of shied away from. I think at heart because I'm kind of a realist. So for me, I tend to look at the concrete picture, what I think my next year will look like. So I look at my planner, of course. And I realize like, wow, a lot of what 2015 had is going to be true for 2016. The structure of my days, the commitments, the activities, the hours of work are all proving to be the same. And I think in that, there's a little reality of it feels kind of full sometimes, and that maybe I'm pulling off a certain saturation level. So add a resolution to that, even if it's helpful or healthy, often feels like I'm going to tip that saturation level. And so for me, instead, I often veer toward more reflection to say, hey, what did I do last year? How did that pattern in my life? Are there any themes in there? And as I did this just recently, indeed, there was a theme. Busyness. Surprising. And in that busyness, I can feel sort of the draw to that. I just read a quote recently that said, if the devil can't get you to sin, he'll definitely try to keep you busy. And as much as I don't like to fall into that camp of, oh, the devil made me do it, I do think there's some truth to the reality of that draw of busyness that does kind of pull me away from connection with Jesus. And it's the reality I think I'm walking into 2016 with. On the one hand, I have this chief theme of busyness. And yet as I look over the span of 2015, I would hope somewhere deep inside, that Jesus would be the theme that I see striking me, that he would be in the pattern of my days with dreams and hopes for how I would walk out my year. And so it feels like there might be a little disconnect. And I wonder what I can do to bridge that without making it feel like there's another layer to my life. And I think somewhere the key is in these ancient practices that we're going to talk about. In particular, one for me today that I've been trying out more recently that has seemed to be effective at pulling me away from the draw and detaching me from the busyness. And it's this wonderful thing called rest. And that rest really has proven, for me at least, to connect me more to Jesus, even in the midst of busyness. So before I go on, let me pray for us this morning. Dear Jesus, I thank you for the ways that you're moving in this room. And I pray for ways that talk of busyness and you and rest resonates for us, that you would get that conversation going for each of us individually. In the way that feels like you and in a way that feels real. Amen. So in this reflection process I mentioned that I just did, one key memory popped up. One that sort of highlighted this tension I was feeling and riding into the new year with. And it was actually last fall, I was transitioning out of a role here into this newer role. And in the midst of that, I had to train my, replacement. And so there was a morning that I had taken to do some training concretely with her, and a colleague came from around the corner to just sort of give us the heads up that this guy had stopped by and he wanted to pray in our space. So he was in the living room around the corner from us. And so I carried on with the training, and about an hour later, this guy comes by to the office and, you know, basically is just saying thanks. Thanks for letting me have this space to pray. It appeared that he needed that spiritual help and space. And at the same time, he was asking for some practical help, saying like, hey, do you know any places in the area that could offer me this and this? And so before he could even finish his question, I had turned my body away from him and start looking up on the computer, you know, where I know files are that have pastoral resources and practical help resources in the area. And I'm giving him all this information before he can really finish what it is he's asking for. And I realize, like, the information I'm giving him is sort of not matching what he's asking. The places I'm suggesting are closed or they're way beyond the proximity he was hoping for. And yet he graciously sort of says thanks and leaves. And I think it was this moment of internal dissonance for me almost immediately to realize that a man had just walked into a church for practical and spiritual help, and I had barely made eye contact with him. I hadn't asked his name. I didn't really ask him much about himself at all. And my inclination in that moment, I realized, even beyond sort of my conscious choice, was to move. And move I did, away from him completely, and away from where God might have been in the midst of that moment. It seemed to me that maybe God gave me that memory as I was reflecting to say, like, hey, this is actually a symptom of the greater scope of your days, that your days are really tight. You know, the reality for that morning training was I had to get it completed by a certain amount of time so I could leave work on time, to get my kids on time, to get them to swim practice on time, to get them home for dinner, to do homework, to get in bed, for me to have time to connect with my husband, Scott, and maybe myself. And so there was this draw and busyness that when I had a moment to reflect, I realized it was bigger than just that memory. And I thought, I have to fix this. I need to do something about this. And thankfully, I think the Bible offers us a straightforward way to think about this. And it doesn't actually focus on the fixing of the busyness. It doesn't give us concrete steps on how to skim down our schedules or take things out. But it offers up this necessity of rest. And it's found nestled in this deeply rooted practice of Sabbath. So for more than 3,000 years, the Jewish culture has observed this thing called the Sabbath. That as old as creation, the Sabbath was highlighted as this necessity. It's sort of ingrained in the fabric of the world from the beginning. We see God as the premier example of doing all this work and labor, of assigning all the function to the pieces of the universe. And he does all that work, and then he rests. And then it's woven in as a 10 commandment, these 10 ways to think of doing our lives well. And it says basically, like, take 6 days to do your regular duties and work, and then take one day, the seventh day, to rest and dedicate that to the Lord. And so from very early on, we get this picture of what our rhythm of our lives will be and how the balance of work and rest will play out, or maybe should play out. And so I was compelled to think about this more, but then also sort of struggling with the reality of, like, but how do I do that? Like, the Jewish way of observing a Sabbath was to take an entire day before the day of rest to prepare for that, to ensure that the day of rest really was rest, that it didn't include doing. No lighting, no carrying, no cooking, and no encouraging others to do. And I felt like, I don't really know how that matches with my life. Like, the closest snapshot of Sabbath for me feels like 2 hours on the weekend to go grocery shopping without kids. That's sort of the picture of rest for me. And yet somewhere internally, I was really hungry for the essence of what that Sabbath was and how it was observed. That it wasn't just this day off, but it was embracing an entirely different way of being with God. And I felt like, ooh, that's what I'm craving. That's what I actually want. And Jesus, too, if we're to carry on through the Bible, sets, you know, a model himself of taking this rest and work, doing balance. If we had time to read through the whole Gospel of Mark, or any of the Gospels, I guess, we would see that Jesus was in busyness a lot, like in constant motion and in constant activity. From the onset of Mark, really, we see he's selecting his disciples and immediately goes into teaching, to expelling demons, healing, performing miracles. And that's true for all the towns that he goes through as he's doing his ministry. And the only thing that really seems to change is the crowds and the number of people that start to follow him. And with that, all of their needs and the pressures and the demands on Jesus. And so we don't see him escaping busyness. And yet we never see him irritable or anxious or frantic. And I can wonder if it is his attention to taking time to rest and be alone with God. And so we see this great moment, I think is a great moment, in Mark. And this is the first scripture on your program. Just before this, actually, the disciples and Jesus had been with big crowds the day before, healing and being in the midst of them. And then we see this the next morning. Jesus woke long before daybreak and went out alone into the wilderness to pray. Later, Simon and the others went out to find him, and they said, "Everyone is asking for you." But he replied, "We must go on to other towns as well, and I will preach to them too, because that is why I came." And so the scene of Simon and the others sort of rushing out in the morning, breathless, coming to Jesus and being like, "What are you doing? Why are you in this place of nowhere? You know that there's crowds and people from yesterday that are still demanding you today. Why is it that you're here and not addressing those right now?" And I find Jesus' response really compelling for me, because he essentially says, all those people are going to be okay. I don't need to go to them right at this moment. Because actually I'm meant to keep moving. That's why I came. And I think he had such clarity around what his next steps would be. Jesus to say, "I'm going to keep moving to the next town and preach in this next town." Because he prioritized having a moment with God in the morning. And then from there, he has clarity to say, and free movement to say, really, it's okay. These people are going to be okay. I don't need to do it all, to single-handedly conquer it all right at this moment. If I did, I would sort of bend to that. I'd expend all my energy and labor here in this one town. And actually, the piece that God has asked me to do is keep introducing me to the people that have yet to see me. I need to keep moving. And Mark doesn't seem to hide this fact that Jesus is in high demand. And I think the Bible asserts this reality too, as a whole. And this is where your program notes will pick up if you're the fill-in type. That all of life, at all ages, in all cultures, will be full of busyness and in need of full rest. So from the beginning of time through Jesus' day to now, that's been true. And the only way to navigate such a life is to really wrap our heads around this idea that, second point, a helpful way to detach from that pull of busyness is to prioritize stopping with God. And I was drawn to the stories that I read of Jesus' life to see that, yes, he's in intensity a lot, but he jumps out of that intensity to take time and rest with God, and then he jumps right back in. And I felt like, oh, that's kind of like my life, and I would like that. You know, he hails boats to get away and to escape, to climb mountains, to have space, to go out into the wilderness. And so it makes me think of, like, well, what are the practical ways that I could actually do that if I can't buy a boat and actually do that? How can I do this practically? And I felt like I had this memory last summer of actually going on a jog with a friend And in the middle of that jog, my friend Tim says to me, "Hey, do you know where there's a bench that we could sit on?" And I'm thinking he means at the end of the run. So I'm like, "Oh yeah, there's one a couple miles down. You know, we can sit there at that park." And he's clarifying and saying, "Oh no, I mean kind of immediately, like somewhere soon." And I'm still not quite picking up what he's saying, and I turn to him and I realize, well, he's kind of out of breath, looks tired. Maybe he just needs to rest right now. And so we make our way over to the bench, and he's clarifying more to say, "No, I really want to take this space to be with God in the midst of movement." And I think, oh, that's kind of odd, and maybe not the best training plan. But I was compelled, and it was a great moment, and I felt like, oh, the run itself was just as efficient and wonderful as any other run that I've gone in and not stopped. And so I just sort of decided, like, oh, maybe this bench thing is how I could do this practice of sitting. And so for the last few months, on most days throughout Cambridge and Boston, I've been taking a moment in the middle of my day, or actually at any point in my day, to stop and intentionally be with God, to slow down a little bit. And I felt like somewhere in there, that Jewish observance of Sabbath essence actually had to be a piece of what this spiritual practice looked like for me, that it had to truly be stopping. So sitting in a car and saying I was spending time with God wouldn't work for me, or being on a couch in the midst of my living room couldn't be that for me. Too many of my senses were engaged or distracted. And so benches, sole purpose, turns out to be to sit and to not do anything. And so I felt like that's a match. And I think the accessibility, convenience, and abundance sort of benches everywhere also felt like a match. And I think I felt somewhere in there, like, if I'm going to try this as a spiritual practice, sitting feels kind of natural and maybe a little easy, that I could pull this off on a day-to-day basis. And yet what I found was that slowing down and being intentional about being still with God was a lot less natural than I thought, that this would actually take some practice. And so I found in those first few weeks of trying to do this sitting bit that I had far underestimated how much my body and my mind had actually become accustomed to busyness, that I had kind of created this dependence on busyness. And because of that, there actually needed to be this little process of something like withdrawal. I realized, like, those first few times were actually really hard for me. I was fidgety, I was anxious, I was impatient. All I could think about was getting up and moving and wanting to go for a walk. I was drawn to movement around me. I would intentionally kind of take benches that were closer to the highway so I could have a distraction, because I didn't know how to be still. To see a squirrel and sort of follow that movement was how my body was sort of inclined. I created this insatiable appetite for movement. And to get in touch with that in the absence of movement was important for me to do, and realize, like, oh, I'm kind of going through a little bit of withdrawal here, and that's okay. And I think if I hadn't realized that, to try to see this as a spiritual practice would have been hard for me. To think that I was failing at sitting, or to think at best that I was just going through the motions and calling that a spiritual practice. And it took some deconstruction on my part too, to see, oh, the way I've approached things in my life, even spiritual practices, has been sort of a task-oriented bend. I would take my phone with me on those first few weeks of sitting on benches and snap pictures of my bench view and then post them on Facebook. And I was like, this is not exactly what I'm shooting for here with the spiritual practice element. I was treating it like another checkbox, I think, on my to-do list. And I was like, no, that's not what this is. So I, you know, if I did inadvertently take my phone with me, I would sort of chuck it away from me as I continued in the process. But once those processes could happen, the withdrawal and the deconstruction, I realized then there was actual internal space for me for construction of a spiritual practice's beauty to take place. So as I was more intentional about doing this, it did become more natural. And I realized that there was a shift that was happening. Even in sort of that initial longing to move and be drawn to that, I could see that now my longing was, oh, I want to go sit on a bench to be with God, as sort of the premier element of that. And distractions I had seen before sort of shifted their definition. So if I was distracted by movement or traffic or whatever, it was sort of now like, oh, that cold rain or that squirrel or that bird's pattern in flight is actually evidence of God around me. It's not a distraction. It's more the reality of God in my space and in my day. And so these perspective shifts really allowed for my posture internally to broaden and soften. I think with my bend towards busyness, it had become firm and sort of tight. And I think it was then that I could sort of hear those sentiments of that Mark verse that we just read, where he said, you know, this is why I came. Ivy, this is why I came, so that you could get to know me more as you sit here with me. So there was this awakening and awareness that was happening for me. But I think I have to be honest that these moments on a bench could really be qualified as moments, minutes, 5 to 10 minutes a day is sort of like the average for me up to this point. And yet it's been striking to me that just moments with God intentionally every day makes and provides so much movement. Movement away from things that are sort of needing to be shed in my life and allowing this freedom of movement more towards Him in and around all of my life. And so I realize I come to benches with a lot sometimes, and some of that is just like pocketfuls of complaining and whining. And yet I can see in times of intentionality of doing this as a spiritual practice that He actually moves us away from complaining. I think that's your first point. So a lot of my whining was kind of benign and more environmental, to be like, oh gosh, it's really freezing out here, or I'm too busy today, I don't have time to stop. And yet other times I feel like my complaining was actually against God. But I thought, oh, that's sort of been the beauty of stopping on moments with God on benches, because I've been able to get in touch with things that I'm complaining about and why that is. God, this relationship with my mom, it's quirky and it's weird lately, and I've been praying to You about that and You haven't changed that. Are You going to come through on that? And I realized as I looked closer in the Bible that there's also people that complain against God, particularly these Israelites. They might be like professional level whiners. But it kind of warmed my heart. And it warmed my heart too to see that God responds in a certain way and provides for them. So let's take a look on your program, this swath of Exodus 16. So the Israelites say, if only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt, they moaned. There we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all the bread we wanted. But now You have brought us out into this wilderness to starve us all to death. And then Moses says to Aaron, announce this to the entire community of Israel. Present yourselves before the Lord, for He has heard your complaining. And as Aaron spoke to the whole community of Israel, they looked out into the wilderness. There they could see the awesome glory of the Lord in the cloud. Then the Lord said to Moses, I've heard the Israelites' complaints. Now tell them, in the evening you will have meat to eat, in the morning you will have all the bread you want, and then you will know that I am the Lord your God. And so my discontent a lot of those times mirrors that of the Israelites, except they probably had more reason to whine because they didn't have food or water and had been walking for a really long time. But I can notice that my internal posture of holding all of my grousing and my complaints inside of me, just like the Israelites, effectively clouds where God is in my space and how actually He's coming through again and again for me. And yet God's inviting me again and again on those moments of resting with him to sort of dump those complaints on him. He's saying, I want to hear it. Like, I can deal with it. Look what I did for the Israelites. I listened, I showed up to them, and then I gave them meat. Tiny little birds, quail, and bread. Complain away. And so as I indulge in that moment and that invitation to complain, I can notice that there's clarity gained. And like the Israelites, as they had that moment of not complaining, they were able to look up, right? It says they looked out into the wilderness. So their gaze actually shifts a little. And as they do that, they can see the awesome glory of God. And I think that's been true for me time and time again on benches with God, that my gaze shifts as I can drop those complaints. It's like a lifting almost to be able to see like, oh, that's where you're coming through, God. And he's saying, yep, here's your quail, here's your bread again and again. Here's a memory of your mom where she actually has this reality. She doesn't like to drive. Here's the reality for your mom. She's really sick. That's affecting the relationship. But I'm still coming through for you. And so it's these moments with God that illuminates that for me. And as much as I still struggle with fear, I think on a daily basis, I do notice that this intentionality of this spiritual practice moves me away from fear. Currents of fear run high for me because I think I play with the fire a little bit of the infiniteness of what my day can behold. There's so many tasks, there's so many things to do, and it's endless. And yet I'm operating within this finite amount of time. And this essence of fear for me can be a distraction. I can focus on it, right? It's what happened with that moment in the office with this man that walked in. I was so focused on what the rest of my day would be and how it would turn out in this essence of time, this constraint of time, that I couldn't see him in that moment. And I think that at the heart of that is this reality that I feel like, oh, geez, if I don't pay attention to the concrete in my day, all of these things, then it's going to swamp me. I'm going to drown in the realities of my day if I don't keep a pulse on all of it. And to stop and to be with God jeopardizes me being able to keep all of that up. And in Exodus 16, if we were able to read through it and think about it a little bit, we can see that God is actually outlining and giving the Israelites and us, I think, this manual of how resting with him will work. They haven't seen Sabbath yet. We haven't bumped up to the Ten Commandments. And so he's giving it to them very concretely. Day after day, he's saying, I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to provide for you. And you're going to rest with me. And I think he does this so concretely because he knows that our human response when asked to stop with him will be fear-based. He'll be like, oh, no, I can't stop. Something's going to drop. I'm not going to have enough. And yet God just keeps providing and providing day after day. And even with that, I feel like the human condition is to fall into the distractions, right? The disciples themselves don't seem to escape this even in the midst of being with Jesus. And so we see this story in Mark that I'm sure some of you are familiar with, but it's illuminating to me this element of fear in there and what it can do. And so the disciples and Jesus are moving away from crowds in this particular scene. They've gotten into a boat for the intention of resting. And on your program, it picks up in verse 37. It says, but soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat, and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up, shouting, teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? And when Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, silence, be still. Suddenly the wind stopped, and there was a great calm, and he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And the disciples were absolutely terrified. Who is this man? They asked each other. Even the wind and waves obey him. And so we see Jesus doing exactly what the intentionality of getting into a boat to find rest was. He's fully resting, right? Head on a cushion. And maybe if there were perfect conditions that day, the disciples too would have been resting. Or maybe they just needed a cushion too. But I think the reality is it was the conditions, right? There were wind and there was waves. And that's the reality of life, right? That something is going to pop up. It's rare that a day is full of perfect conditions. So for me, it's the essence of time, the dance between the infinite and trying to find rest. And it's distracting, and it can produce fear for me. It takes up space in my mind, and it can pull me away and help me get distracted, right? I can forget that maybe being with Jesus in the midst of it can actually be helpful. And the disciples seem to almost forget, but they don't. They actually stay engaged and connected to Jesus. I mean, it's kind of a mediocre question they throw out, like, teacher, don't you care? But they're staying connected, and even in that, which is kind of a human response, Jesus immediately responds, right? He quiets the waves and he quiets the things around them. He settles the distractions. He nixes out fear and brings a great calm. And I think when that fear dissipates, the disciples are afforded this greater perspective and view on Jesus that they hadn't had. Just moments before, they refer to him as teacher. That's what they've known of him up to this point. And then moments later, they've seen a whole new layer to Jesus, to be like, whoa, who is this guy? This power and this authority that he's just shown. And so we get greater perspectives of him as we take time to be with Jesus. And for me, I found that as I've taken intentionality to unhook from life a little bit and connect with him, that he again and again quiets those distractions for me. That he says, the realities of your life are not going to swamp you. You're not going to be overtaken. If fear was to take hold, maybe that would be true, but not with me in the midst. And I think, too, he can move us away from frenzy. It took me a little while on sitting on benches to realize just how much this nonstop doing had actually affected my internal space. I think I could get kind of convinced that, oh, I'm not busy. My life is just full. Or I'm a really efficient multitasker. And then realizing when I had moments to sit on benches that I could get in touch with sort of the layers of frenzy that I feel within myself. That to try to keep a pulse on all the spokes of my life leaves me feeling at best, I think, a divided self. I'm stretched. I'm trying to do all these things. As I touch all these spokes, they seem to multiply and demand more of me. And so I'm kind of 100% not accomplishing anything. And the Israelites too seem to miss this. They seem to spend a lot of energy around God's provision. If we read on here, starting in verse 19, it says, then Moses told them, don't keep any of this food until morning. But some of them didn't listen and kept some of it. But by then, it was full of maggots and had a terrible smell. Moses was very angry with them. And then we see this other scene that's similar, Moses saying, eat this food today, for today is a Sabbath day dedicated to the Lord. There will be no food on the ground today. You may gather the food for 6 days, but the seventh day is a Sabbath. There will be no food on the ground. Some of the people went out anyway on that seventh day, but they found no food. And the Lord asked Moses, how long will these people refuse to obey my commandments and instructions? And I think somewhere in that behavior of the Israelites is a lot like mine. It's this belief that I have to do something. Whatever I want to see in my life, I have to be a part of that and expend energy around that. Whether it's help or food or meaning, I still need to have a pulse on that and do that. And yet God seems to be saying, actually, you can do too much. And all that energy that you're putting in there to go and look for that fuel for you in your life is kind of expended energy. and it's going to result in a sense of, at best, something rotting. You kind of need to wrap your head around the idea that I'm giving this rest to you as a gift. And we see in verse 29, him saying this, they must realize that the Sabbath is the Lord's gift to you. This is why he gives you a two-day supply. And yet they go out anyway and try to pick up food. He's saying, what I'm offering you is this moment to slow down. Stop doing. Stay in your places and be with me. Stop overcommitting. Stop frenetically trying to do everything. What you need to know is to how to be still with me. Practice this. And it seems like as I could sort of wrap my head around the idea that this is a gift to be with him, that he could move me toward a rhythmic sense of my day. So over the last few years, I've kind of lost this sense of when it is I'm on and when it is I'm supposed to be off. I think technology has layered in that reality for me a little bit, in a good way, in a lot of things. It's like there's ease of accessibility of information. There's efficiency in my day. It allows me to do more. But somewhere in there, it's become fuzzy, these lines of on and off. Things and realms that were crisper and clearer now aren't. I can send an email from the dinner table. I can finish a project on vacation or from 33,000 feet in the air. And so it seems the more I can do, the more I will do. And somewhere in there, I think that this is a practice because God knew we would struggle with it as humanity from any generation. And yet in spending time with Jesus on benches, I think he sort of reiterates the order for my day. Much like he did in the boat with the disciples to say, hey, I'm the power and I'm the authority, actually. I'm the only one that can kind of take care of your day for you. And as I realized that, I also then realized what was competing and vying for my definitions of authority and power in my life. The doing had a tug. The swiftness of life around me was establishing some sort of authority. And so the spiritual practice of unplugging from life and connecting to Jesus has created a penetrating, powerful tug for me. It's almost retrained in me a taste for rest that even beyond the bench, now I can sort of actually see moments in my day where I'm like, oh, I could actually take this moment to rest. I could not take my phone with me to the dinner table so I can rest with my family and have a dinner. And so there's an order that comes to my day as I seek to carve those spots out. And I also think there's been this movement toward people in a way that I missed this guy in my office that one afternoon. I listened to a rare NPR interview actually with this poet, Mary Oliver. She's in her 80s now, but she was talking about this practice of writing. And from a very young age, was intentional about writing as much as she could anywhere. And she spent a ton of time in the woods behind her house. And she would stick pencils in trees as a way to ensure that if she was out and had a thought, she could actually write that down. And she says, with her discipline and sort of this willingness to be aware of the world and scope of the world around her, this mysterious thing would come in a lot of times. And she termed it convivial listening. That in those moments, she would write these huge swaths of poetry and never have to edit them again. It was something beyond herself that was happening. And I felt like, oh, that's what it's like sometimes in my days after I've sat on a bench. That sometimes those moments, a concrete moment of sitting, doesn't really elicit much. I'm sort of like, I don't really know if this practice is doing much today. But then as I go through my day, I'm like, whoa, God is like doing this convivial listening thing. He's extending dialogue with me throughout the day that points to people. I spend 15 hours on a swim deck a week often. Two of my girls are on a swim team. And I often feel like God's in those spaces, you know, where I'm kind of inclined to be grumpy or annoyed. He's saying, hey, look at this older couple doing Tai Chi in the pool. Isn't it sweet? Isn't it full of love? That's me. That's me in that. Or this brother-sister couple where she's helping her disabled brother do some muscle therapy in the water. That's love. That's me in that. And guess what? You could pray for your kids as they're doing lap after lap after lap. And not as a chore, but as an invitation from me to know that I'm here in this space. And so again and again, I feel like he points me closer to people as a way that he's drawing me even closer to him. And maybe it's obvious, this next point, that he moves us toward this never-failing connection with him. I'll continue with a swim story where I had this sweet moment to see a couple of weeks ago. One of my daughters finished a swim race, and she was walking down the length of the pool deck to go to where they corral the swimmers after. And my husband was up in the stands watching her. I was on the deck timing. And I could see them walking in parallel along the length of the deck. And they had made a connection at some point that they saw each other. And you could see they were trying to make sure they were keeping pace at the end so that they would intersect to have that moment together. And I can see Scott trying to dodge people and get there. And then they intersect, and it's great. And I'm crying on the deck timing. And I think it was because it was the sweetness of that moment to realize, like, oh, that's what is happening. Every time I sit on a bench with God, I'm ensured that we're going to intersect. I have to manage sort of what I think my distractions are in getting to him. But he's going to be there, regardless of what the timing is. So I think God's time for rest is today. It's at any point that you choose to unpull from that busyness. And that pull of busyness or whatever it is in our own lives can sometimes prove to sort of harden our, I don't know, inner posture to where God might be, his sounds, his reality around us. And maybe that's why it's a practice, right? That he knows that's going to happen day after day, that there's a real pull in our lives. And yet rest can really afford us this freedom toward him. So I was going to call the band up to maybe try out a little of this sitting with God moment. I heard a song a little while back called Slow Me Down, and the band's graciously agreed to perform it this morning, and I figure you're all sitting anyway. We're kind of halfway there. So use this space. I mean, if you feel like, oh, slowing down's really not a match for me where I am or where God is for me, you know, just take this moment to, I don't know, write a to-do list. Or use this as a time to be with God. So let me just pray for us to end. Holy Spirit, I'd ask for you to extend this sense of slowness for the rest of the day and in tipping into the next week in ways that maybe slivers of our lives feel busy, or maybe there's an overarchingness of busyness. God, I just ask for you to replace that with your sense of rest and peace. And that at maybe the very least you would brighten our senses to how it is you're around us. In your name, amen.